morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, the 28th of June, in the last couple of days of the financial year. Marcus, what happened overnight?
Well, overnight, I was thinking, if as I woke up this morning, hit the phone, I was thinking, if we've got another huge day on Wall Street, we might have to hit the buy button, and it didn't happen. So Wall Street had 840 points, was it, a rise on Friday, and overnight it was down, Dow Jones was down 62. So our 127-point rise yesterday, a convenient bounce off the bottom. Have a look at the charts in the strategy piece, but a convenient bounce right off the support line in the NASDAQ and our market, but hasn't followed through. So what happened overnight was durable goods pending home sales a bit better than expected. Bond yield rose a little bit. And so the interest rate sensitive sectors came off. Tech was off and consumer discretionary was off. And the same thing's happening here. At the same time, the resources are looking a little bit perkier. Oil was up 1.7%, iron ore up 1%. And that's the same thing here. Also not helping consumer discretionary is JP Morgan, who have downgraded retailers today. JB Hi-Fi, Premier Investments, Woolworths, Coles, Wesfarmers, worrying about steeper rate rises than they expected. I think they're a little bit behind the curve, quite honestly. The IMF did some downgrading, said the US will escape recession. China declared victory over COVID in Shanghai. G7 vowed to keep pressure on Russia. I'm sure Putin is quaking in his boots at that prospect. Michael Burry, I'll leave Henry to talk about Michael Burry and his thought on inflation. We are heading towards the US results season in the next couple of weeks or so. We've got our results season in August. A lot of REITs and infrastructure stocks go ex-dividend tomorrow.
Very nice. Thank you, Marcus. Tom, anything much to add locally?
Thank you, Ben. Our market doing okay, up 15 points. Energy and miners are leading the market higher. Fortescue up more than 3%. BHP up 2%. Coal stocks also jumping, although I thought that was interesting. I didn't see the coal price up much overnight, but Whitehaven up 3.4%. Tech and consumer discretionary names bid lower. Big four banks all in negative territory. Macquarie is looking to raise $400 million by a capital notes offering. Tassel Group up 14%. They've rejected a third bid from Canada's, and I hope I pronounce this right, Cook, C-O-O-K-E. Collins Foods up 12.4%. They had full year profit and dividend higher. Good results there. Weekly consumer confidence up almost 4% last week. And census data today showed Australians are less religious and more culturally diverse than ever before.
Very nice. Thank you, Tom. Layton, what have you got for us from BrokerTown?
Thank you, Ben. How is that census data going to affect the markets, do you think, Tom?
I don't think it's going to have much of an influence at all, Layton.
To the brokers, I've got Metcash, that's MTS. Tom did a fresh idea for this one yesterday. They've been downgraded to neutral at Credit Suisse. The broker said that they are surprised by the extent to which Metcash has outperformed in the second half and notes an acceleration in market share gains by IGA during the fourth quarter, which was against expectations that the group would lose market share post-COVID. Credit Suisse does expect IGA to lose some ground as inflation drives an increase in value-conscious customers, but notes that the company is more leveraged to inflation than its peers. The target price decreases slightly down to $4.67, which implies an 8.6% upside. And Evolution Mining, that's EVN, was absolutely smashed yesterday, down about 22%. That was on the back of their guidance update. They downgraded FY22 production as well as FY23 and 24. And they also increased cost guidance for 22, 23 and 24. It's actually been a pretty mixed response from the brokers this morning. Credit Suisse is underweight and has lowered its target price to $2.70, which is about in line with the current market price. Morgan Stanley has retained its equal weight recommendation and target price of $4.60, which implies a 74% upside. And Morgan's has lowered its target price to $3.23, which implies around a 22% upside, but they upgraded their recommendation to an add just on the recent share price fall. And that's all I've got for you this morning, Ben.
Nice stuff. Thank you, Layton. Rolling straight into a couple of fresh ideas this morning. Chris, you've got healthcare in your barrel.
Thanks, Ben. Indeed, I do continue to run the ruler over the healthcare sector. Just looking at it broadly, it has been a relative underperformer in recent times, partly because of its own prior success. So Marcus has provided me a chart this morning of relative performance versus the ASX 200. And from 2017 through the end of 2021, healthcare had a fantastic run and then it really fell in a heap and, as I said, has been underperforming.
And that run would have been in the time when CSL and Cochlear both went from being relatively small and insignificant companies in the market scheme to being very prominent.
Yeah, well, they just got ritzy, and that's sort of the next point in the argument, is that their valuations ran away a bit there. And there is a subsector, I should say, within healthcare where there's quasi-tech names that rely heavily on technology. So your Pro Medicus's, Nanosonics, Mesoblast, Imugene, PolyNovo, and the PEs on some of those remain outrageous. Again, Marcus has provided me a great chart of the sector.
Worth also pointing out, when you look at that sector chart, CSL is 52% of the sector, ResMed's 18%. So between two stocks, you've got 70% of the sector. So it's a bit like looking at the telco sector. You're really looking at Telstra. So sure. And it's not really Cochlear either. Cochlear's
no, they've gone. They fell right away, but they were number two in that really big rise.
Very good. Some good observations there. The point that I'm trying to get to is that amid the recent flight to quality, I think there are still some stocks in that healthcare space that will catch a bid. One of them is Healius. This is a stock that benefited greatly from PCR testing and COVID testing, but it has seen a slower recovery in its base pathology business, which in and of itself is a very solid part, underlying part of the business in its own right. The expectation is coming out of the pandemic, those parts of the business will pick up. Part of it has been driven by labor shortages, haven't been able to get enough staff to administer the services. And again, that is another factor that is expected to recede. It's turned off the bottom in terms of the share price. The brokers actually quite like it. Target price is 14 to 35% above the current share price. And like I said, it's just one of those ones that I think is a quality name within a sector that will probably start to catch a bit as this flight to quality continues.
Very nice. Thank you, Chris. And we'll let you run away because you are going to be on Ausbiz The Call.
That's right. The Call starting at midday, talking 10 stocks with Koshy and Mark Gardner from Macro Cap.
Very nice.
And I'm on the ABC tonight, the business. And the ABC have asked people to start going back in the studio, which means it costs me 3 hours instead of 20 minutes distraction. I really wonder.
Probably $60 in petrol these days. Too.
Well, and I risk my life on a motorbike for 3 hours. You know, okay, so yeah. Weird how the world has changed, but the ABC hasn't.
You want to get a faster motorbike?
They don't get any quicker, actually.
I was just thinking you must be taking a long route to get from Cheltenham to South Norwood.
No, by the time you sort of start thinking about it, do the questions, answer the questions, get on the bike, forget the piece of paper you wrote the questions on, have to come back, get on the bike again. Anyway, you see it.
Yes.
Distracting.
Fair enough. Well, we'll look forward to watching it all the same.
Great.
And Tom, you've got an idea for us as well.
Ben, did someone say KFC?
Very good.
Anyway, Collins Food managed the last year in style. They've started off this FY23 on a solid footing. All headline numbers showed growth. They were ahead of consensus. A higher dividend as well tells you the business is confident it can achieve its growth ambitions. It's looking to open about 20 to 30 stores this year.
Why would Collins Foods be doing okay now?
Why? Well, the idea is that its business offering and its value offering is pretty resilient regardless of the economic cycle. And there was a broker comment, I can't remember who it was from, but they said in times of high inflation, you actually get more people going to those cheaper offerings.
It's when it costs you $8 to buy iceberg lettuce, $10 for a Zinger box.
You actually get more people.
I'm nodding like I know what a Zinger box is.
You love them. Yeah, it's great. They addressed margins, which they showed a little bit of compression. That was as expected, but they said there's going to be some short-term suffering before margins recover. So we could see first half of this FY23 be a little bit more difficult for them, but it is expected to recover. Brokers liking the business, they see it well positioned given that appeal regardless of the economic cycle. Share price starting to show some signs of life, and Chris mentioned this morning that it printed a few buy signals. Valuation considered undemanding, so it could be worth a nibble, Ben.
Tom, can I just ask, in terms of Domino's Pizza, which has been an absolute dog, how does that KFC result or CKF result impact Domino's? Is there a look through that investors should be looking at? Because Collins Foods up 11% on the back of those results. Is there something we should take away, pardon the pun, for Domino's?
So Collins Foods and Domino's, they both were trending down for a while. So it's not like one's done better than the other, really. But I think Domino's, Chris often goes on about how they sort of cannibalize their own market. They just keep opening up more and more stores. But I guess the argument is the same, that it's still a cheap food offering in times of high inflation. People will go to those, you know, you'd rather buy a $10 pizza than a $10 iceberg lettuce. but I guess more people like chicken than pizza.
The interesting bit actually is if you were to plot a chart of Domino's and Collins Foods, it's exactly the same.
Yeah.
So one's fallen 43%, Collins Foods, and Domino's fallen 63%. And you know what? They both just bottomed on the chart. So
yeah.
There are buy signals on our scans this morning for both stocks, and tomorrow even more so.
And the other point, Henry, is that 80% of Collins Foods revenue comes from Australia, whereas Domino's is a lot more dispersed and they've got different economic recoveries going on in different geographies. So Australia's been holding up.
The thing I was thinking of, Tom, as well, was the mechanism of the meal in terms of KFC is drive-through. So you're absorbing all those costs yourself in terms of fuel costs and it's pickup, whereas Domino's tends to be delivery. So the poor kid on the bike or the car or whatever, those costs are increasing for the Domino's chain. So that is something else to consider. It's not such a drive-through offering, perhaps, as KFC and Taco Bell. Don't forget Taco Bell.
Yeah, Taco Bell there. I think that was 1.6% of revenue last year, but growing.
And Domino's are a third, Australia, Japan, Europe.
Yeah.
There you go. Very good. Thank you, Tom. And I've also got a fresh idea in there as well. Following on from what Layton was talking about with Evolution Mining, that was down 22% yesterday. There was five of the prominent gold stocks in our market printed 52-week lows yesterday. So there is a lot of damage going on in the sector. It's down 31%, the sector, since April 10th. And since then, we have seen the RBA and Central Bank and the Fed both raising rates. And I've got a chart in there showing the inverse correlation between gold sector and interest rates and yields. And that has held up really well over the last 10 years. And specifically over the last couple, it's been really strong. As soon as those yields started ticking up, the gold sector tipped down. Long story short, there's not a whole lot of reason to be optimistic about gold at the moment. The only thing it could have in its pipe is that if the growth slowdown does really take hold and economies across the globe are really struggling, then gold is one of the few asset classes that does outperform in a low or no growth environment. But if that is the case, there's going to be damage everywhere else. And you're probably just going to be losing money less slowly with your gold exposure. So not a whole lot to be excited about there, but a really interesting chart.
And I was reading an article yesterday. It was actually one of my compulsory professional development points I have to do. And it was just talking about inflation and gold. And there is a one-liner which says gold is a hedge against inflation. And the point of the article was that there are so many other ways to hedge inflation these days that that relationship has probably gone. So despite this inflation peak, gold has gone nowhere.
Yeah, you can make a case for a whole lot of other things. Even Bitcoin's been talked about as an inflation hedge at various stages.
How did that work out, Ben?
I haven't touched it. It's just more making the point that people are looking elsewhere and away from gold.
I think the Bitcoin thing actually has some logic to it, because if you can't trust a currency and gold's related to currency, the US dollar in particular, if the central bank's going to go and print 40% more US dollars in order to overcome a moment of a global financial crisis or a pandemic, then the stability of your reserve currency is rubbish because it's at the whim of a central bank, whereas Bitcoin doesn't have a central bank printing more Bitcoins. There is a finite number. That was the argument which Henry had in his podcast with the fund manager who did cryptocurrency.
Yeah, I like used cars as my inflation hedge. Henry, what are you writing about today?
Thanks, Ben. What am I writing about today? Well, we're on the cusp of US reporting season. Last night, we had some numbers putting around the US in terms of dividends that banks are going to be releasing because of the stress test that the Federal Reserve put on it. So I did a speech presentation about 5 years ago now. Time flies, doesn't it? At the AIA National Conference up on the Gold Coast, which was a lot of fun. And that was on how to avoid landmines. So just a few things on how to avoid landmines for our Australian reporting season coming up. Also making some changes in the small cap portfolio in terms of a bit of a reset. It's a new year coming, a new financial year coming. So a little bit of a reset there and putting some rules in place around it. It's been a pretty good performer over the last 5 years, but different markets do require different strategies, I suspect, going forward, as the bull days are probably over, at least for the time being. So just going to be shaking that up a little bit in the next couple of days. companies. So that's good. I was also on Ausbiz this morning, Tom, talking Collins Foods, and I did the joke that you did to somewhat better effect. And
well, I'm glad someone got a rise out of it.
Well, I can only hope, because it was television rather than live. But yes, yeah, so just talking Collins Foods there. And I guess one thing to remember as well in the healthcare sector that Chris has been talking about is that there is a live bid still for Ramsay out there. It's kind of lukewarm, but it's still in the background there, which could have quite a big effect, given that the bid price was, I think, $88 and Ramsay is currently $73.40. So there is potential there, shall we say. But we did see yesterday Link administration with the guys from Dye & Durham coming back there and advising their bid downwards. So I guess there is serious potential for Ramsay's bid to either get pulled or revised downwards, but it's certainly a factor in the sector. I've got to say, I don't share the enthusiasm for the likes of ResMed and Fisher & Paykel. I must admit, I still think they are a bit of a con job to some extent in terms of the growth and pricing, but that's just my view. Apart from that, that's about it from me today.
Good stuff. Thank you, Henry. And worth noting, Henry, you've just been on Ausbiz and you're recording the investment committee tomorrow.
Yes.
And then on top of that, you've got your Ask an Analyst tomorrow too at 5:30, if I'm not mistaken.
I have. So it'll be the last one for this financial year. It'll be interesting to see how many we get along to that one.
Very good. Marcus, what have you got in strategy?
Strategy can be pretty quick. I was waking up this morning, as I said, wondering whether we were going to have another great big day on Wall Street, but it hasn't happened. So finger no longer hovering over the technical buy button. It would only be a technical buy button. I make the point in the strategy piece today that for a sustainable bounce, rather than just a technical bounce, we are going to see some macro improvement to change things rather than just have a sentiment bounce. And we need to see a peak in inflation. That could come on really quickly if the Russian conflict calmed down, but a peak in inflation, a drop in interest rates, and our growth fears to go away. And that's the scenario for a proper pivot point on the market. At the moment, this is just oversold relief rally stuff. So no reason to do anything but sit in cash in our strategy portfolio, which we continue to do. Otherwise, today I've had a look at the performance of various drivers, particularly commodity prices, currencies, and equity markets over the last 3 and 6 months. These are the underlying drivers for the results seasons coming up, the US results season, the quarterly results season, and our own half-year results season or end of financial year results season coming up in August. And if you look at some of the movements over the last 3 and 6 months, over the last 6 months, coal is up 156%, oil up 47%, iron ore 16%, gold flat, the Aussie dollar down 7.5%, which is good for international earners. And we've also seen the All Ords down 11.5% in the past 6 and 3 months. And that's not terribly good, obviously, for stock market stocks. Anyway, bit of a risk on the US results season because a lot of the drivers have gone against them. Technology stocks are hardly going to be chinking champagne glasses, and the investment banks are seeing the IPO, M&A, capital raising activity drying up, so they are unlikely to be too upbeat as well. So outlook statements could be rubbish. Usually the results season starts well, peaks, and then fades. This year, I think there is a significant risk that the results season does disappoint. It certainly seems more risk than reward. So watch out for that coming up in a couple of weeks' time.
Marcus, just on the US results, I mean, given that the US market has tumbled 20%, are we not already factoring in a bad results season?
Oh, absolutely. I've written in there, all this is in the price. This is not something nobody knows. If you look at the energy sector, for instance, you can say the oil price up 156%, but the energy sector's up 18% in the last 6 months or so. So it's all in the price.
Yeah. There was you alluded to it earlier as well, just on Michael Burry, who's the guy behind the Big Short back in GFC days. He has a theory on US inflation, which he calls the bullwhip effect. And his theory is something I wrote about in the newsletter today, is that companies are basically stock full of stock, basically. The likes of Target, Walmart, all these guys have really stocked up with consumer goods, etc. And we saw that from some of the Target numbers that were released a month or so ago. And his idea is that because they've got so much stock and the consumer is slowing down, they're going to have to discount that a lot to get rid of it. And that will have a good impact on getting inflation down. The problem with that, I guess, is when you look through the US inflation numbers and you see what is driving the US inflation, and it is food and oil, energy, gas prices. And that's unfortunately kind of throws his bullwhip effect into maybe not quite such a great thing, but we'll see if he's right or not. He's been right before.
Yeah, the other thing that's coming through as well on inflation is wages as well and staff shortages, and seeing whether that squeezes inflation as well. We'll see. Anyway, finally, on my strategy piece, I've got some charts in of the ASX 200 and the NASDAQ. We are still in a medium-term downtrend, but both markets have bounced conveniently on the bottom of the trading range on support. So we'll see how long that carries on. But they are both in medium-term downtrend, short-term uptrend. But the very long-term trends, if you have a look at the chart in there, you'll see we are at the bottom of the trading range on the very long term since the GFC trading range. So this is a bounce or break point.
Nice stuff. Thank you, Marcus. Now, question of the day. What is a company that will have good results, Tom?
Dangerous putting your name to this, isn't it, to a stock? But I'm going with Worley. The share price is trending up. They had Investor Day about a month ago that had good expectations for a strong end to the financial year. They're leveraged to higher energy prices. So a lot of the ingredients for a good result are already there, and things that I look out for as well. I'll just signpost positive reaction to announcements before results, share price trending up, recent positive guidance, and macro tailwinds. And if you have ticks in all those boxes, chances are you'll get a good result.
That's not too worried about potential of outlook being underwhelming compared to the last 12 months.
I guess that is one consideration, but they do have exposure to that growing energy transition side of things. But the oil price has been high for a long time, so that should, and I don't think it's really going to come off dramatically in the next couple of months.
Very nice. Layden?
Bit of an inflation hedge, this one. I'm potentially stepping on Henry's toes, but Transurban, TCL.
Very nice. Henry?
You can step as much as you like, Layden, I have to say. What is going to have a good result this time out? I'm not sure, to be honest. I think the result is always very much backward looking. It's more the guidance that is going to be interesting, but I wouldn't be surprised to see CSL having a decent result. They have got potential, I guess, there. And talking healthcare stocks, they've got potential as they move towards the acquisition of their big new pharma purchase that things could improve.
Very nice. And I'll jump in, so we leave Marcus for last. I will say Computershare will have a good set of results. We've talked about before how a rise in US interest rates pretty much flows directly down into their bottom line. The raises have been more aggressive and are forecast to be more aggressive in the short term. That means better results for Computershare. Marcus?
I think although BHP's results will be quite complex because of the Woodside, what's in, what's out, what's the comparison, but share price off 15% or so on worries about growth, and there are no growth worries for the profit numbers. They have seen the iron ore price up this quarter, 16%. Nothing has really gone wrong except sentiment towards growth. And at some point in the cycle, you have to worry about stocks like BHP and Fortescue and Rio, which have started paying big dividends, are on low PEs, high yields, that the reason they are is because no one believes the cycle will go on forever. So at some point they peak out. I don't think it's going to be this result season.
Fair enough. Thank you, Marcus. And that's it. Thanks, guys. See you tomorrow.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.